Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the IC's Boardroom Talk series, which tests the investment cases of London's listed companies. My name's Emma Powell, financial services writer at the IC, and today I'm joined by Anthony Coombs, chairman of S&U, which provides car finance and recently entered the bridging loan market for small house builders. Anthony, thanks for joining me.
Great to be here.
I was wondering, actually, if we could just start off, maybe you could explain a bit about how S&U goes about gaining new business, because obviously you've had quite rapid growth in terms of customer numbers.
Yes. Well, we're mainly broker orientated. In other words, we go through finance brokers like 24/7, Zuto, and Evolution, one or two more. And we've got about 35 of those on our panel. And the market has moved that way, really, since about 2005. We used to go direct to garages, but obviously the insurance regulations made it more difficult for them to be allowed to talk to us and to provide finance. So the brokers took over, and that coincided with the rise of the internet. And that's the way it works. And we're very fortunate because, I mean, we operate in a market which is very robust, which is strong, mainly because of the good employment situation at the moment. And we get about 80,000 applications every month for our products, and we write of those about 2,500.
Do you think you'll be able to maintain the same pace of growth going forward?
That's a very good question. We've never rushed for growth. We've never given targets for growth. And in fact, in the last period, we've written the same amount of business as the record amount we did in the same period last year. And that has been deliberate because, I mean, we always think that after a period when you've been growing at about 20-25% a year, there ought to be a pause. You've got to make sure that the quality is right in your book debt. It is very strong at the moment, but we just thought that it would be a responsible thing to do, just to take stock, and we anticipate that growth will resume after that, not possibly on the same level as we've done in the past, because I mean 25% on 25% or 25% is by definition more difficult to do. But we think that we've got a very, very strong market. We've only got about 1% of it, and we think there's a big potential.
Is that what you're trying to do then? Can grow market share? You think there's a lot of opportunity to do that?
Yes. I mean, we think that if we provide the right product for our ultimate customers, which are the people who borrow money from us, and provide the right service for our brokers, then we can take market share. And I think we probably have been taking market share of the narrow market that we serve, because we're in non-prime used car finance, providing HP finance, not PCP finance. We probably have between 10 and 15%, and we think that we can grow that, provided that we continue to provide the same level of service for our both kinds of customers, the brokers and obviously our ultimate customers.
How do you define non-prime?
It's a very good question again. I mean, it's a bit like an elephant. You know it when you see it, but it's a bit difficult to define it. It's just below prime and a little bit further down, but it's not subprime. Because subprime, very often you have distressed borrowers and people take advantage of that. We don't do that. We go for people who, just for instance, I mean, you may have had a steady job, but 2 or 3 years ago, you missed a couple of payments on your credit card. Now, that would show up as a default. And some of the prime lenders would say, we don't touch you. And that, I think, is actually very unfair. But nevertheless, that's the case. And it's those kind of decent people who've got good intent to repay, who need the car for getting to work or getting the kids to school. Those are the kind of people we deal with.
As with any kind of credit or finance company, impairments will be a big thing that investors will look at, obviously, when you release your updates. And impairments as a proportion of revenue have been rising. Is that a concern at all?
Well, it's a concern in a broad context. And obviously, we want to make sure that the trend comes down. And it's quite a big ship now. We've got 56,000 customers, and we've got about £250 million worth of net receivables. And recent signs are that the quality of new applications is going up, and we would therefore expect that impairment trend, and we're not saying when, we're actually to return to the record low levels of what we've been able to achieve the last few years. Nevertheless, even with the current figure, about 25.8%, we're well within the 10-year average. So, you know, of course, it's something that we're looking at. That's one of the reasons why we thought, well, it's a sensible thing to have a relative pause in terms of the growth of the business. We think that that will be resumed, and we think that the trend in impairment will actually return to what we regard as more normal, possibly not as low as it has been, you know, in 4 or 5 years ago, when we were effectively writing prime customers at nearer non-prime rates, because the banks, you know, after the crash, had really were turning down people they really shouldn't have turned down for prime business. But nevertheless, we think it'll come back to a level which is consistent with what we need. And I must also say that even at levels of impairment higher than what we've been getting at the moment, our return on capital employed has still been very, very good. And we anticipate that that trend will continue as well.
Why have they risen then?
I think the reason that they've risen is that I think there may be some customers, and we're only talking about a very small minority, maybe 10%, 10-15%, who during the period, and hopefully it's coming to an end, the latest figures show, during the period when real incomes were being constrained, may have borrowed elsewhere in order to be able to maintain a standard of living which they hadn't done previously. And that we may not have been aware of in some cases, we may have been aware of in other cases. And that's meant that the constraint on their financial circumstances may have increased. So we think that prudently, we've adjusted some of our underwriting criteria in order to be able to take account of that very small minority of customers. And we think that that will effectively mean an impairment returns to historical levels, although it's still historically well below our 10-year average, which I think is quite important to make, point to make.
What is the 10-year average, out of interest?
It's around 26.4%.
Okay, so it's
close, but not very close, and particularly given the fact that the trend is likely to turn back down again in due course, I don't see that as a problem.
And how do you ensure then that you write risk at an adequate price?
It's quite a sophisticated thing. I mean, we obviously write rate to risk, and obviously we have certain kinds of products for certain kinds of customers. That's what responsible lending is all about. And it involves looking at the individual circumstances of the customer, looking at where they live, looking at what their outgoings are, looking at what their previous record has been. So it's not just a question of economic circumstances, both local and national, or even of their income. It's what their outgoings are, how they've reacted to their debt commitments in the past. I mean, we have a team of about 7 or 8 statisticians and mathematicians all working on the algorithms that go towards this. And I'd have thought it's true to say that one of the strongest elements in the 19-year continued growth, both in terms of profitability and sales, of Advantage has been its underwriting capability. That's why the quality of debt has been so strong. That's why it remains strong. And we are continually refining that. I mean, I've just mentioned, you know, in the recent months, we've refined our underwriting criteria. We'll continue to do that. One, because it's commercially sensible to do so. And secondly, because that's what responsible lenders do and ought to do.
As you said, we did touch on that you did slightly tweak your underwriting standards. Why was that exactly?
Well, I mean, precisely for the reasons I've been saying. We are always tweaking the underwriting standards because, I mean, you're talking about a moving target, if you like. The economy is always changing. People's circumstances are always changing. The job market is always changing. So given the fact that we're in a part of the market where possibly people's available income is slightly more constrained than in, say, the prime area, it's very important indeed that we too do take cognizance of that and continually watch exactly how the debt is performing. And that has been one of the strengths of the business in the last 19 years, which is why we've been able, recently in the 10 years, to produce record low levels of impairment, and even over our 20 years of business, being able to maintain a level of impairment against revenue, which is both responsible, in terms of responsible lending, and commercially viable.
Have you seen any change, I don't know, within the past year in the types of customers that are making applications in terms of their risk profile, or is it been quite steady?
It's pretty steady. And the reason for that is that our brokers make sure it is. I mean, you know, the brokers send us those applications that they feel will be of interest to us. Now, we actually transact a relatively small proportion of the total applications we get. It's only about 3%. And there's a whole variety of reasons for that. About 25% only, 75% are rejected by us on very sensible grounds. And of that, of the 25%, about 10% actually transact. Why? Because 90% may get a better deal elsewhere. Good for them. That's precisely what they're entitled to, and that's only right and only as it should be. And other people may just not go ahead with the car. I mean, the couples may fall out. They don't want the car anymore. And so it doesn't proceed to transaction. That has really been the pattern in the business for quite a long time. And, you know, it's one that we adjust to. I mean, 80,000 applications takes a lot of dealing with, but we can give a decision in principle as to whether we're prepared to lend to somebody, looking at the kind of matters that we've been talking about, in about 8 seconds, which obviously our broker partners really appreciate, because it's important that they, because they're in competition with other brokers, it's important that they can produce an answer for somebody who's making an application for finance ASAP.
I'm guessing growing the kind of broker network is very important then.
It is. But it's also very important to keep your main brokers happy. And we have 5 or 6 brilliant partners. We've got 35, possibly slightly less brilliant, but nevertheless very, very good partners in the broking field. And don't forget, the internet is a natural oligopoly, because who looks beyond the first 5 when you Google, you know, used car finance? It's generally the first 5 who've got a bit of a grip. You don't normally go to page 2 or page 3 in order to find a broker. And so there is a natural oligopoly, and I would think about 50% of our transactions come from 3 or 4 of the top brokers as a result.
I just wanted to touch on, actually, PCP. You mentioned it earlier in terms of the fact that you don't write any PCP business. Is that right?
Yes, we don't. But we don't think it's suitable for the used car market, to be honest with you.
But there has been quite a lot in the press during the past year. I'm sure you've seen it about the US market, PCP market, and some kind of concerns around whether there will be a collapse in the UK PCP market and a knock-on impact on used car values. I don't know if that's a concern for you or whether you think it would have an impact on demand for finance.
We certainly haven't seen any evidence of it whatsoever, despite the significant growth in the PCP market. And if you look at the Auto Trader latest statistics, I think they go to February, March, you'll see that actually used car prices are continuing to rise. And we're finding, obviously, the applications for our business are very robust as well. We don't do PCP. The reason is that, and partly because on the basis of the kind of values we're going to write, there wouldn't be enough at the end to give people sufficient comfort that they've made the right decision to do PCP. And the second reason is that a lot of our customers like to own the vehicle. You know, finish, that's done, I've paid for the vehicle. Most vehicles now will give you at least 4 or 5 years life after you finish the 4 or 5 years that it takes to pay for it. So that gives you 9 years of life. Most people want to have done with the finance. They don't want to be re-going into the market and then continually having to pay as you do under PCP, unless, of course, you buy and produce a lump sum right at the end of the PCP term. So, you know, we don't think it's suitable for our market, and certainly not at the kind of car values, which is an average of six thousand, maybe to £12,000 that we're talking about. The PCP has generally been more popular for the more expensive kind of cars, and we expect generally that to remain the case.
Just finally, last question before we finish. I just wanted to ask you about the Aspen Finance, that business in terms of providing the bridging loans, whether you have any type of growth targets. Do you think it's going to become a much bigger part of the overall S&U group?
Yeah, another very good question. And we wouldn't have started it on a hobby basis. In other words, we only want to do this business if we make a substantial profit over the next 3 or 4 years. Substantial profit, what is that? Well, in our terms, it's probably £5 million a year. It'll add to the diversification of the group's earnings. And we think that there's a lot of potential in that business. It's estimated to reach about £8.8 billion a year by 2020. And we think that in the refurbishment market, in particular, we think there's a huge amount of potential. And Aspen's done very well. I mean, it had a slow start, we'll say that, because we possibly underestimated the importance of credibility with brokers, because it's still a broker-orientated market, just as the car finance market is. But they've actually gained traction. They're up for several industry awards now. I think that they get on very well with the brokers. Their reputation is growing, and they're in profit. So on a monthly basis, I think that's first class, given the fact that they've only been going for a year and we've got high hopes for them.
OK, great. Well, I think we'll leave that there. So, Anthony, thanks very much for joining me.
Great. Thanks very much indeed.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.